It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, January the 4th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And you can get me on the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join us for some free chat. Sign up for premium content. Less than a cup of coffee a month. Get updates on the show. Interact with me. It's all there at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Happy New Year. First show of 2026. Hope everybody had a good holiday season. And as I said during my New Year's Day address, as we announced this year's Talking Mets Purse of the Year, breaking up the core, the activity of breaking up the core, which dominated the discussion throughout the early hot stove and holiday season. It's a conversation that will continue going into the new year. What I said that day is that once you hit January 1st, the new season's in front of you. The old season's always, you're looking back up until New Year's Eve. Now you can look forward 6 to 7 weeks before pitchers and catchers, and they'll actually be within 60 days. Think about that, how crazy that is. There'll be some kind of baseball being played down in Port St. Lucie. Crazy for some of you like me who are in this cold, icy, you know, dumping of snow that's been going on here in the New York Northeast area. So maybe it's crazy to think, but we're much closer to baseball now than we've ever been since the final out in Miami back in late September. So to kick off the year, I was thinking a lot about this as we took a couple of days off. Yeah, there was some over at the Substack, Beyond the Mic post and whatnot, but I was thinking a lot after we ended our year and talked about really in the last show to cap 2026, understanding David Stearns, understanding what he did in Milwaukee, understanding that even though he has a big payroll, that, and Sandy Alderson said this on his initial press conference when Steve Cohen took over the team, I remember it very, very vividly, that sometimes the largesse of resources is as much of a curse as it is a blessing. And I labeled today's show the curse of OMG. And the reason I did that is I think that, and I see it all throughout the week, every time a free agent comes off the board. Now, all these Far East options came off the board this past week. Mets were, doesn't sound like they were in on any of them. And if you remember when we had Jim Allen on just a couple of months ago, our friend that covers the NPB, that was the consensus walking away from it that was going to happen. So the fact that fans are surprised is kind of mind-boggling. But I start to see fans talk about Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger and so on and so forth. And there's been rumors. And look, Mets assistant GM, you know, and this is down in South America. I don't know where he was when I was looking at it. Ed Brizuela, you know, talked about how they're still looking for an outfielder, talked about their commitment to building a competitive team. Sounded just like David Stearns, except in Spanish. And it's hard for the fans to see that as they are really unclear about where the Mets are going, because since Cohen took over, it's been a go all out to make a competitive roster now while building for the future. And there's been a lot of what I call shoehorning going on throughout that. Now, I put up on X a poll with David Stearns' approval rating. And going into the recording of this show here on this late-ish, early-ish, mid, let's say mid-afternoon part of our Sunday, as of this poll, about 38% of the fans approve of what David Stearns is doing. 25% disapprove, and almost as many are not sure as they are approvals about what's going on. And I think that says a lot about why I'm going to do the show today in the manner that I'm doing it. And it's why I did the poll. Now, it's very unscientific. Only a couple hundred people voted on X and what have you. But I think there's a quote, and I don't know if he's a subscriber, but if he is, I'm going to give you a shout out. MJB, he's at MJBJAX0723 on X. He wrote, "I love how he," meaning Stearns, "is building the minor leagues and development processes, critical for long-term success. I'm unclear how that translates to the major league level in the short term." So that, to me, I think is a synopsis of where as a fan base everybody's at. And even me, who covers this team and tries to be objective and tries to go out and give you a balanced approach, has been an advocate for a long time of what I call the shoehorn approach. You're going to shoehorn development into a demand and an edict to spend whatever it takes and maybe even have a ton of sunk cost dollars that could impact the development process, because it's important never to take a chance on the farm system or take a risk on maybe some derivative baseball, some of the things that he did in Milwaukee. And because we're in a big market, because we're in New York, because the Yankees are across town, and because the Dodgers have become this thing, this well-oiled machine that spends money, develops, and seemingly gets whatever player they want, in a way that I think sometimes even the Yankees at the turn of the century, in a matter, they didn't even achieve, if you really think about it. I mean, the Yankees at that time, yeah, they wanted Giambi, they got Giambi. They wanted Mussina, they got Mussina. They wanted A-Rod, they got A-Rod, although A-Rod fell to them. And when things fell to them, they were opportunistic. But the Dodgers target guys. They don't let things fall to them, maybe to a certain degree, depending on the market. And maybe that'll happen with Kyle Tucker. But I think that everybody is still going under the idea, and I blame the summer of OMG for this. It was a beautiful summer, but everyone's going to the idea that the Mets were, I think, further along under Cohen, myself included, because of that run. And that run is really a synopsis of where baseball's at. And I got some things that came up on X, some real good content that fans shared that I think is important. So what I'm going to be doing here throughout the show, and it won't be a long show, it's more of a kickoff of the year State of the Union, is setting up expectations of how this organization is going to be run. Now, some people call it chilling. Some people call it rationalizing. Some people may call it, you know, making excuses. You could call it what you want. I'm calling it reality. We are no longer in a situation with this president of baseball operation, and the owner has clearly given him the ability to do whatever he's going to do for the remainder of his contract the next 3 years. We're entering year three. To build this thing his way. In a way, when Cohen took over in 2020, this is probably what he wanted. He wanted a Stearns-type baseball executive. He wanted to build or start the process of building organizational infrastructure to win now and in the future and build a competitive foundation with a strong minor league system. But he couldn't get the right people. He came in, you know, late. He brought in somebody that he had to bring in Sandy Alderson that was meant to help him assimilate into the good old boys network. A guy that was a dinosaur, probably pretty early into his first tenure with the Mets. Let's be honest here at this point. And a lot of people don't like admitting that, but he was on the, you know, he was over the hill when the Mets brought him in. We're not going to get back into that. So when Stearns comes in that offseason, he starts to, and he could have done the, and we've talked about this, he could have taken a sledgehammer to the entire organization, and he didn't. He fired the manager and he made some changes, and he certainly, started to implement his own people in there. But he allowed the holdovers to prove that they were going to be part of a long-term solution, or at least provide some winning in the interim. And those guys were the core players, the Nimmos, the Alonzos, McNeil. Edwin Diaz, I think, is something that just was an unfortunate byproduct of Stern's style of negotiation. And we'll also bring that up. So, you know, the summer of OMG happens, and I think the fans fall in love with players. They fall in love with the roster. They fall in love with the idea that Stearns is all of a sudden come in and wave this magic wand, when in reality, all that happened was the Mets got themselves into the tournament, and as they put their money on black or red throughout each of those series, the roulette table came up on their number. Now, luck is a product of design. They put themselves in a position where they won a big game in Philadelphia. When they got back to Citi Field, it was a close game, and Lindor was able to come through with the grand slam. In the ninth inning, they were opportunistic against Devin Williams. And then they ran into the Dodgers, who were a better team on paper. And, they got their clocks clean. They hung in there. They brought him to a sixth game, which tells you a lot about this club, that club was able to, with everything, get a, which now is a dynasty, a back-to-back dynasty team, to a sixth game. And who knows, you get to, and the Dodgers knew this, you get to a winner-take-all game seven, you just never know what's going to happen. Dodgers know that. That's why they didn't want nothing to do with a game seven. And we all fell in love with this group. And I think we were blinded about maybe that was their ceiling. Maybe that was their limitation. And also the fact that Stearns was not about shoehorning for the remainder of their viable time as players, the OMG crew, with development. He was going to start to build a team, whether it be a team that, is what we're seeing, which is a team that I think focuses more on pitching, homegrown pitching, focuses on starting pitching, focuses on players that are more athletic, more two-way players, players that could be versatile and play multiple positions. Whether that's the blueprint going forward, we'll see. But I think OMG was a blessing in terms of it gave us a really great, fun Mets moment that all of us will remember for the rest of our baseball lives. It'll be a special place in our baseball hearts. I'm sure it sold a generation of fans on the Mets. But it's a curse because I think that we're chasing that. And in a lot of ways, 2015 was similar to this club. Because when they lost to the Royals in 5 games, a series that I think they should have won. Now, I know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Same thing with the Yankees series in 2000. A bounce here, a bounce there. 4-1 loss turns into a 7-game series. But in a lot of ways, they were outmanaged. And I think that played into a couple of bad decisions. One by Familia in game one with the quick pitch. And I also think they were outmanaged when they were at Citi Field. Ned Yost outmanaged Terry Collins, which isn't a surprise because Terry Collins was the guy that consistently got outmanaged when he was a manager here. So you always chased after 2015 that feeling. And you kept the young pitchers together when maybe they should have started to think about, okay, these are all guys that are going to get expensive. They're going to get hurt. Who do we invest in and who do we don't? And maybe move on from them a little bit sooner. They didn't do that. And I think Stearns is resisting doing a similar mistake by chasing the summer of OMG. Now, when you start to think about the summer of OMG and you think about the sport in general, and let's put aside the other part that nobody talks about, especially, as I'm sitting here listening to all the pundits and the fans cry about, oh, they didn't sign Okamoto, they didn't sign Imai, all these guys that nobody knew about 3 months ago. They could have fallen on their head. They wouldn't know him. He would have been given a baseball reference page that it was scoffed at. Now, all of a sudden, everyone thinks they're surefire solutions. Clearly, the market said they weren't because they had a limited market when it comes down to it. Everybody's like, demanding the Mets just sign something. Sign anybody. Let's get going. It's as if the offseason is a competition. It's a competition for the back pages of the papers, in certain degree, money and season tickets from the fans, which is important. But in the end, the fans will show up if a team wins. But where we are at as in this sport, and you got to remember, this sport is different than the NBA. This sport is different than the NFL. And this sport is certainly different than the NHL. And although there's expanded playoffs, in a lot of ways, the expanded playoffs has made it harder to assess how you trade young controllable talent and hold on to it. It's made the job that much harder. Now, there's a Twitter account called Rational Yankees Fan. And I know you're going to probably be saying, Mike, you're actually quoting a Yankees fan account? Yeah, I am. I'm quoting a Yankees fan account. Because I think he put together, and he's obviously saying this in the context of the Yankees, a very interesting synopsis of where the sport is at, and I think you have to really listen to this. Listen to this, and going forward, it is the foundation of why teams do what they do. Take the AJ Prellers out of the equation. Take what Toronto is doing after going to Game 7 and trying to double down on bringing in as much talent because they see an opening. They're in a little bit of a different spot. I think fans thought the Mets were in Toronto's spot. I'm not quite sure, and I'm not quite sure even if they were that Stearns would do what's going on in Toronto. So let me just read this. So he writes, the MLB playoffs aren't a crapshoot. They're a weighted lottery. The best MLB team in a season wins about 60 to 65% of its games. That means even a dominant team loses roughly 60 times. In the NBA, an elite team will win closer to 75 or 80%. That difference is everything. Now compress that into October. MLB decides champions over about 15 games. That's less than 10% of the season. The NBA decides champions over 80-plus games, including 4 7-game series. That's a completely different signal-to-noise ratio. That's why baseball feels random and basketball feels inevitable. A 100-win MLB team is only a modest favorite in any given playoff series. A top NBA seed is often a massive favorite before the series even starts. Baseball is built on low-scoring, high-leverage events. One bad pitch can swing an entire season. In basketball, you need to be worse over hundreds of possessions to lose. So skill in baseball shows up differently. It doesn't guarantee titles. It guarantees access. Remember that. Remember that quote. It guarantees access. That's why the Dodgers keep showing up. They're not lucky. They're consistently better at depth, pitching, development, and decision-making. They buy more tickets to the lottery. But once you're in the lottery, you're still in a lottery. That's why appearances stack and championships don't. That's why great teams disappear early. That's why October feels chaotic, even when it isn't unfair. Skill decides who gets to October. Variance decides what happens in October. And that tension between control and chaos is the entire drama of this sport. That is so well said. That is one of the best tweets. Rationally Yankees fan, I'm sure you're not listening. I could not have written that better. ChatGPT couldn't write that. Grok, whatever AI you use. Now, it's interesting that I usually don't quote other podcasts because I think everybody needs to do their... And let me put it this way. When I put another podcast or give them a plug, it's not because I'm friends. It's not because I just like them. It's because they do good work. And I will always say this. There's always been this thought in this space that we're all in competition. We're really not. We're not in competition. It's not about Mike and Talking Mets versus Joe DeMeo and Connor Rogers or anybody else. It's about you like what I have to say today, and maybe you listen to 6 Mets shows throughout the week, and later you get something different from Wardy, or you get something different from the Just Mets guys, or you get something different from some rando podcast put on by fans. Look, I was on Baseball and Barbecue with our good friend Jeff Cohen and Leonard, and that's a different type of show. I highly recommend it. That doesn't mean I'm not telling you to listen to me. That's the whole spirit of building your own personal library. That's what the world is about today. So I just wanted to get that out there. The point is, I want you to listen to this clip. It's Andrew Claudio with Rich over at Just Mets. And he's trying to make the equivalency because they're trying to do what everybody's trying to do, what you're trying to figure out. Well, what the hell's going on here? This is not the offseason we thought. It's not even close to going the way that I predicted. As I said, let's build the offseason on Alonso and Diaz and build around bringing them back. None of this is happening. It's quiet as quiet can be. There's sort of the part that I think is playing into that. But listen to what they say about what Stearns is doing. He compares it to Thibodeau and the Knicks. It's kind of loose. I agree with some of it. I disagree with some of the other ones. But listen to this.
A lot's been made over the pitch of what is his plan. I think David Stearns may be looking to build a floor with this team. I come from the basketball world. The Thibodeau of it all with the Knicks was like, that was a franchise that needed a baseline floor of we make the playoffs every year before they can establish a new ceiling. And you're watching, if you're a Knicks fan, what the new ceiling could potentially look like. If David Stearns comes here and just establishes in the era of 6 playoff teams make the playoffs every year in the National League, we're in it every year. That will be a start. That will already be progress. The very small benefit of the doubt I will give him is that he's here to develop a floor, which would be rooted, say it with me, Rich, in run prevention and in defense and in guys that are able to be productive even if they're going through slumps.
Doesn't that sound like exactly what Rational Yankees fan put out? That Stearns is trying to establish the baseline. Now, I've called it, hey, you're an in-the-muck team and what have you. And I think where you're at now is Stearns, as he makes decisions on the roster, he has to look at his minor league system, the cost of the free agents that are out there, the cost of the trades that are out there, the name on paper, the production on paper, the contract, all these things. And he says to himself, and think back to what Billy Epler even said, the best team in the sport, the Dodgers, going into next year, back-to-back champions, has a 17% chance probably in Vegas of winning a championship. That's the best. Any of you guys watch Landman? It's a show with Billy Bob Thornton on Paramount Plus. I like it. It's about the oil industry. You could learn a lot, you know, a lot of interesting things there. But one of the things that goes on, and it reminds me of sports a lot, the whole business of oil is like building a baseball team because it's about probabilistic outcomes. And I mean, the difference is, you know, yeah, Cohen can lose a couple $100 million on a roster, but he can't bankrupt, hopefully not, the Mets with one bad year, like what happened in the end of 2025. So the whole thing is about outcomes. And I think there's a situation recently where they have like a 10% chance of hitting gas or something like that. It's a whole big storyline. I don't want to go into it too much detail, but basically Billy Bob Thornton saying, you know, it's not worth doing it. We only have a 10% outcome of success, which means we're going to lose. So basically, I'm listening to Billy Bob Thornton in this Landman, and I'm saying to myself, well, that's like the baseball season every year. That's every season. Now, that doesn't mean you don't try, but it goes to show you have to be more disciplined in your approach to building a baseball team. And I think that that's what's going on right now with the New York Mets. Now, whether they make a trade, hey, look, I still keep the damn Twitter account up while I'm here doing my thing. Who knows if something comes down? If it does, we'll do what we did the day of the Nimmo trade. But I think this very, very methodical approach is not good for fan engagement and for talk radio, but it's really the way the sport is going for all the reasons you just heard, from rational Yankee fan to our friend Andrew Claudio at Just Mets to Billy Bob Thornton, who's given you a lesson about oil, an oil expedition. But you could take that and put baseball into it. I mean, think about that. You could put baseball into that. So what was interesting that came up, and I was thinking about Soto, the Yamamoto pursuit, because Stearns was part of both of those. And now he's getting the reputation of being too stubborn. I've heard that, well, you know, it's got to be at Stearns' price. So I saw this quote, Nick Grayson over on Twitter put it, and I don't know where it's from. It looks like it's an Athletic article from last. So let me rephrase that. This is from last March, from Will Salmon. It's called "Inside the Mind of David Stearns: How the Mets Exec Learned to Be Dangerous." And one of the first comments that he pulled out of there, Nick Grayson, good job doing some work for the Talking Mets podcast. Longtime agents give Stearns credit for his ability to read players' markets, knowing what to pay and who to pay it. Some of my peers may not want to admit that, said an agent whose list of clients features some big names, but it's true. So I think with Stearns, he knows the players that are worth going all in. Yamamoto was one they lost. Soto was another they won. But he's not just going to go out because Boris is asking for a 7-year, $210 million deal from Cody Bellinger. He knows that Cody Bellinger is worth this. He knows that Cody Bellinger is a good free agent. He knows he could use him. But there is a point where the ends don't justify the means. And he's going to wait the market out. He lost, and it looks like he lost with Diaz doing that. But I don't think he was done with Diaz. I think they were close. They were in the ballpark of Diaz. Diaz decided, well, if you're not going to overpay me, you're not going to blow me away, you're not going to give me that 5-year deal, I'm just going to go to the team that I could be the house and pretty much have the best chance of winning. He did that. That was a Diaz decision. I don't think the Mets, after everything that happened with their relationship, with the relationship with the ownership group, I don't think the Mets expected that. Now, maybe that's naive in a world of mercenaries where everybody has a finite time to make money, but I don't think they expected that. I think there was a way that if Diaz had come back to the Mets, I think there's no question about it, they would have figured out how to make that work. Luke Weaver wouldn't be a Met today. Diaz and Devin Williams would be making the super bullpen 8th and 9th inning. This bullpen is good they have now in the 8th and 9th inning. That would have been great. You know, we don't know where it's going to go. So when you start to look at that quote and you go back and read that article from Salmon back in March, a really good article, you know, that maybe I should have read and really looked at a little closer going into the offseason, you start to understand more about what's going on. Now, it doesn't mean you like it, but you understand what's going on. And now you understand from MJB how the minor league system is not necessarily all the time going to translate to the major league team this year into next year. But he has to balance that so that whatever decision he makes in 2025 offseason into 26 doesn't negatively impact him maybe even 2 years down the road. He's got to look at the landscape, not to mention the fact that we don't know what the Major League Baseball economic system is going to look like a year or so from now. It could be completely different. The other part of this, I think, that creates discontent with the fans is this is not fun. The business of baseball inherently is boring. Contracts, building teams, building farm systems. Baseball is, out of all the sports, the least sexy. Might be its demise in the long run. In a TikTok world, in a world which is seemingly people making decisions on important political situations on 90-second videos taken out of context, I think that baseball could become extinct because of that. Because think about every player, whether they're a college graduate or come out of high school, JUCO, whatever it may be. When you get into the minor league system, it's about the grind, the repetition, the work. The work that's not sexy on backfields in Bowduck towns or in a hot, piping hot Florida sun or Texas sun when nobody's watching, making no money, just doing repetitious, boring work, muscle memory work in a lot of ways. That's how greatness is achieved. Now, you hear all the quotes from Kobe and Jordan, and everybody loves putting these things up on Instagram and Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. But nobody really understands what that means because very few people make the sacrifice. That's why these guys are great. That's really why they're great. So I think as we go into the new year, my message is this. We certainly have every right on February 15th to assess and criticize and question David Stern's building of the 2026 Mets roster. We certainly can be skeptical about the farm system because historically the Mets, especially in recent years, outside of the pitching development that happened, which, let's be fair, two of those pitchers that were developed over a decade ago were required from outside the organization in Syndergaard and Wheeler. The Mets haven't been great at developing offensive talent or pitching talent, quite honestly, in the last decade, outside of Pete Alonso and McNeil, Nimmo there too. So it's been a spotty player development track record for close to 15 years. Some good, some hits, a lot of misses, not a lot of depth produced. We've talked about it over and over and over again. The bullpen has been one of the biggest areas where they could have been able to produce anything out of that farm system of competent bullpen work, hence why they have to go out and give Luke Weaver $11 million. We could question all that, but ultimately, if they are going to get themselves into this weighted lottery, and I think that that's maybe, we call it the tournament, and it is a tournament, a weighted lottery. If they're going to be one of those six teams consistently, and the only way you're going to win championships is to do what the Dodgers did after the Guggenheim Group bought this thing and got them to the point with their money and their intelligence, got them to the point of every year they're in the postseason. So maybe they're going to win some, maybe they're going to lose some, but at the end, it's going to be a really nice history of Dodger baseball that will be developed. And eventually, they're going to have to sit back and rebuild, and it's going to come apart. It happens to everybody. You're going to have to sit back and see if the Stern's way of doing it is the right way, because quite honestly, it's the way that other teams are doing it. Now, you could say, and I know what's going through your mind with the whole Stearns knows the price of his player. Stearns knows the value of the player. He's going to wait for the market to come to him, which is a very passive approach. Think about what Andrew Friedman said. If you're rational about every free agent, you're going to finish second or third. That is true. I think Stearns knows when to throw irrationality out the window because, yeah, they were going to go, what was it? What did Yamamoto wind up signing for? Seven or eight years? Let me see. Yamamoto contract Dodgers, because the Mets were going that way too. It was a 12-year deal. The Mets were kind of like in there. Soto was a 15-year deal. With those kind of players, where Yamamoto was at his age and his capabilities, where Soto was as an elite all-time offensive player, those were irrational contracts that made sense. I don't think Soto should get a 15-year deal. I would have loved to be able to sign Soto to a 7-year deal. You get your prime years out of Soto, similar to what they did with Carlos Beltran. The Carlos Beltran contract in 2005, the winter of 04 and 05, was perfect. They got the best years out of Beltran, who will probably be a Hall of Famer in a couple of weeks, hopefully. They were able to trade him after he started to decline and demise, where he still was good, but he wasn't a Hall of Fame level good. He wasn't a 5-2 player anymore. Got some value back in Wheeler. And he had still probably 3 or 4 years left of quality, but it was on the back half where he wasn't one of the top 5 or 10 best players in baseball anymore. That's a perfect contract. But that just, with all-time players like Soto, that's not going to happen. And look, if Beltran was a free agent today in his prime with the two-way nature of his game coming off that postseason series that he had in Houston, he probably would get a crazy contract just like, you know, 12, 13 years, whatever, maybe 15 years like Soto. Maybe in a lot of ways, because of his two-way nature of his game, elite glove and center field, he'd be worth more in today's market. So he can do that. He can be irrational. He's just not going to be irrational on Corbin Burns. He's not going to be irrational on Kyle Tucker. He's not going to be irrational on Cody Bellinger. By the way, other than Bellinger and the Mets being checking in on Tucker, I don't hear anything. Like, that's why this whole thing about the free agents from the Far East and the whining about the Mets, there was really very little connection to the Mets. I'm not saying that they didn't at least inquire about their markets. And they're like, well, Stearns went to Japan to scout and he came back with nothing. Well, maybe that's why he came back with nothing. By the way, one of those, I think it was Takahashi, he went back to Japan. He wasn't a very sought-after arm because there was no interest. Just because they're from Japan and they've been successful in the MPB doesn't mean that they're guaranteed to be stars here. Not everybody's Yamamoto. Not everybody's Ohtani. I mean, the Mets have quite a few Japanese component. You know, Masato Yoshii was a nice pitcher back in the day, but he was a fourth or fifth starter at best. Maybe number three on his best day. Veteran, some moxie. But, you know, there's guys in the States that could give you that. Just because they're Japanese doesn't mean they have some magical powers to be great because they're from the MPB. So I think that really, and we're going to take a break and we'll go to the mailbag after this. I think that Stearns is building the team the way that will get them into the tournament every year. And then that doesn't mean they're rebuilding. That means they're going to take some chances. That means they're going to, because they feel good about it, maybe go with Carson Benj in the outfield and maybe have Austin Hayes as his veteran caddy in case things go bad. You know, maybe they're not going to, and I got to tell you, if Bellinger goes back to the Yankees, I don't see them signing any of the remaining big free agents. I really don't. Maybe they make a deal, but I think that is the only big free agent. I'm very skeptical that they'll get into the pitching market because I don't know they could get a Framber Valdez or Ranger Suarez on a deal with an opt-out, a lower risk deal with an opt-out. I keep going back to what Blake Snell signed with San Francisco to reestablish his market. I thought Dylan Cease would fall into that. The Blue Jays blew him away. I think that's what they're looking for with some of these starting pitchers that could give them innings, like a Framber Valdez. Ranger Suarez, kind of to me, has a little bit of Shaman Eye in him. 6-inning pitcher, but look, could be an upgrade. And you need, with young pitchers in that rotation, question mark on Sproat, question mark on Tong. Who knows if Scott, what he could give you coming back from TJ surgery. Holmes now and Senga, I would say, are not question marks, but no sure thing. Manaea coming off a down year. You could use a veteran arm, and I think they'll get somebody. Maybe it's via trade. Maybe it's a Lucas Giolito type. Maybe it's a old school veteran for the love of the game type, like a Chris Bassett or Justin Verlander. But I think they'll get somebody. But I don't think that there's a guarantee. And I know that the fans, and you just saw the quote earlier about how Stearns approaches the market for these players. I know the fans are not going to like it. They want AJ Preller, high stakes riverboat gambler GM. That is not what Cohen wants. That is fun for us. That may get them some playoff appearances. And I know it's worked for San Diego for a couple of years. But I got to tell you, eventually the bill comes due on that. And that is like a baseball deal with the devil. Oh, when that deal from the devil gets called in, it gets pretty ugly. So you got a landman reference during the kickoff show here for 2026. You got a religious reference to the devil here and deals with the devil. How much better can it get here on the Talking Mets podcast? Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, mailbag, first mailbag of 2026. You're listening to the first Talking Mets podcast of 2026. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Before we wrap up here, first show of 2026, let's see what the fans are saying. Let's start with some criticism. Our friend Andy, and I meant to bring this up last week, and I didn't get to it, but I made a joke, I guess, and it was a joke on X, Twitter. So one of the fans wrote how he loves when we do the Talking Mets Person of the Year, how I asked the fans for the vote. And then I make this, and I say, I'm very clear, hey, this is my show. I ask for your input because I want to have a collaborative nature, but I hold the weight because it's my show and I have the right to veto you. And he called me a dictator. He was joking. I found it, I got a chuckle out of it. And Andy said, you know, did you seriously retweet a post about being a dictator to Mets fans? This is off-putting and makes me question a lot of things. Is that how you look down to us? Well, first of all, Andy, no, I don't look down at all to any of you fans. And I say this all the time, the fact that some of you spend an hour of your day, at least once a week, listening to me. Some of you pay for premium content. I take that very seriously. Believe me, there are plenty of Sundays, because I got a lot of things going on personally, professionally, this show, that this is a job. And sometimes a job gets in the way of pleasure and fun, gets in the way of me doing some other things. But I've made a commitment, because I take it seriously, and I enjoy it. But I made a commitment, so I would never, ever look down on the fan base. The fan base does frustrate me, and I'm very concerned, and I'll get to that with another comment made on X from a listener. I'm concerned about the fans and how they're going to treat this roster, especially the young players going into next year, because they're upset at Stearns. They're upset that the core was broken up and their favorite players weren't brought back. But I don't look down on the fans. I get upset with the fans, but I don't look down on the fans at all. And let me say that. Now, Andy followed that up, and I'll keep on Andy here, that he doesn't think Stearns is up for the challenge. Not signing any of the Japanese players who are young, not too expensive, and don't have to give up prospects or draft picks to is Stearns failing to do his job. Stearns doesn't go big enough. Soto and Alonso last year were all Cohen. Stearns is trying to show how smart he is with threading the needle and acquiring nondescript players. That way, if the Mets are good, he'll get more credit. He doesn't have the aggressiveness of the Dodgers or the Blue Jays. Even the great Francesa said that. It's not just me. I hesitated to even send this because I know you'll poo-poo this, defend the organization, and talk down to the fans who aren't afraid to call out the organization. I can no longer stay silent. Stearns deserves to be fired. Now, Andy, what you're saying here is harsh. And all due respect, I think that none of us really know Stearns' ulterior motive. I find it hard to believe in a high-pressure job with all the resources in front of him that a guy would purposely not sign free agents so he could find reclamation projects to show that he's smarter than everybody else. These are one of 30 jobs. He's making reportedly about $10 million a year. That's a nice contract. He's got three more years on it, and he doesn't have to work again if he was smart with his money. If he gets fired, and never works in baseball again. I mean, he's got money, and he could go and get a regular job if he wants, or invest, or do something else. Similar to, you know, Theo Epstein worked a lot longer, but that's similar to Theo Epstein. When Theo Epstein was done, Theo Epstein was done. He didn't want to work anymore on this. I think Francesa's using an old-school talk radio hot take narrative to generate discussion. It's my issue, and I talked about it with some of the old school New York Post reporters, that again, here we go. They're asking Paul Blackburn, who was here a hot 5 minutes and had an ERA of about 9, about the Mets clubhouse. I mean, again, we know that maybe everybody weren't on the same page, but you know why the Mets lost? Part of that was how Paul Blackburn pitched. So I'm not so sure that he should be a guy that should be discussed. By the way, what I did today and really looked at some of the conversation about the sport, and I'm not just trying to pat myself on the back, and the things that I did today about the probabilistic nature of the sport, that's what I would like to see the New York Post do, not just continue to rehash a headline. I mean, the same paper, which I do think the paper does a good job with sports, by the way, that had a headline, Yankee sign all-star, former all-star, Paul DeJong was a an all-star in 2019. Come on. Come on. I think him not signing Japanese players, Andy, they just didn't think they were that good. Just, and that's what I said earlier. And I didn't say it earlier to address your, I'm reading your email now, but I addressed that at the beginning of the show. Not going big enough. Look, the money is always going to be what it's a Soto contract, a Yamamoto contract, a generational player. Cone is going to be involved because it's his money. And that's the way it's always been with every big contract. With, you know, going back, even George was involved with Reggie Jackson and the big free agent signings. I mean, that's just the way it goes. That doesn't mean he doesn't want to be involved. Cone's not going to get involved in signing a 2-year deal for Jorge Polanco. I mean, maybe he'll get involved in, you know, speaking to the agent and the player about the amenities and some of the things that the team provides, but he's not involved in every free agent sign. He's going to be involved in the big ones. Every big, look, if I owned a baseball team, I'd be involved too. You know, $765 million of my money. I don't care how rich you are. That's serious cheddar. So I'm just trying to reframe your thought. You have a right to feel the way you're feeling. I also don't know if the aggressiveness of the Blue Jays or the Dodgers that the Mets feel, and look, the Dodgers were opportunistic with Diaz. They didn't think they were going to get him. And they're trying to be opportunistic with Tucker, from what I understand, trying to get him on a shorter-term deal. That's not aggressive. That's opportunistic. There's a difference with the Dodgers. The Blue Jays are being aggressive. What they did with Dylan Cease was aggressive. I don't know if that's what Stearns wants to be. I don't think, and I outlined it quite lengthy, I feel, in this show, why in this current state of this sport, in the weighted lottery system, I'll use the terminology of the Yankees fan that we talked about, why we would do something like that and risk future budgets and future opportunities when you can get somebody similar that could still get you into the tournament and then pounce when the time is right. I think he'll pounce when the time is right. So I'm not defending the organization. I'm not happy that Alonso's gone. I'm not happy that Diaz is gone. I would love to be sitting here on the 4th of January and be talking about this Mets team with those guys and figuring out how they could improve the team with those two guys, with Diaz replacing Luke Weaver and with Pete replacing Polanco. I would love to say that. But that was not how Stearns wanted to build a team. And I think the more that you hear about maybe his feel, you know, it looked like he didn't believe that this group of players could get him to the next level after losing game 6 to the Dodgers. He still has two top 10 positional players in Soto and Lindor, who at least should be two top, both of them should be top positional players for the next 3 years. Soto should be for the first 5 years of his deal. He's got interesting high upside starters. He's got a farm system that may, and I'll write about it this week over Beyond the Mic, you're starting to see some talk about maybe there's some good bullpen arms available. There's some component players like an A.J. Ewing, a Nick Morabito. Maybe they're more than that. Jacob Reimer, maybe another impact power bat that could be part of the mix in the next year. Maybe that's where he feels. Maybe I could go short-term and compete with some veterans and then incorporate the more cost-controlled kids that will do what the veterans would, on longer-term contracts, do over the long haul. He's doing it from a derivative perspective. But if there's an impact player, i.e. Juan Soto, i.e. Yamamoto, since he's been here, he's been involved in it. Now, if you're telling me Cohen's twisting his arm, I find that hard to believe, Andy, because if that was the case, then Pete Alonso would be a Met and so would Edwin Diaz. And they're not. So, I mean, that's just part of it. So, Andy, hopefully that makes you feel better about listening to me and who I am and what I believe in and things like that. Now, let me bring this up. Ryan Leach, Ryan is over on X, wrote this, and I think this is very fair. He wrote it underneath the poll about David Stearns' approval rating, which, as again, let's see, we'll give you an update. It's still 38%. 38% approve, 37% are not sure, 25% disapprove. I think that's kind of where it's going to fall. I think I put it up for a couple of days, about 24 hours left. You want to go over to X and vote, so be it. I threw it up in the Talking Mets chat room, too. Ryan Leach, his first year, I gave him credit for the value in some of the starting pitchers and players he picked up, but last year he really had a dud. I think Stearns would admit that. As much as people want others to forget the core players he has gotten rid of, I feel he has a tough sell job with the fans this year. No doubt, Ryan, and that goes back to what I'm concerned about with the fans. I think the fans are going to put tons of banana peels out for these players that are there, players like Beatty and Alvarez and maybe Mauricio and Acuna and Benj and maybe Jet Williams, players that as young players, hopefully they don't have the, especially with Benj and Jet Williams, if they come up eventually or they're not traded, have the growing pains that a Beatty and an Alvarez had. I mean, some of that was injuries. Some of that was maybe it was coaching and environment. They addressed that over the offseason. So I don't think Stearns at all, as well as Cohen, believe for a minute that this is exciting the fans to come out and set record attendance another year at Citi Field. But if the Mets are playing well with young players, an exciting brand of baseball, and winning and competing, and I think last year, even when they were winning, I think there was kind of a malaise at times because the offense wasn't really supporting the pitching and the pitching wasn't supporting the offense. It was one of the more frustrating years, even when they were playing well. I could tell you that. And I think, again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show, the curse of OMG. The curse of OMG put like a love affair with players and an expectation on the organization that really that season was a product of the weighted lottery of baseball. You heard what the Rational Yankee fan said. The Rational Yankee fan said, you get yourself in a high-leverage situation and you produce. Pete did it. Lindor did it a couple of times. Diaz was able to close it out against the Phillies. Swing there, swing there. Phillies beat the Mets. Brewers don't even get the Mets to the Phillies. We're talking about a whole different situation. And by the way, if Pete doesn't hit that home run in Milwaukee, and I've said this a billion times, you probably don't feel the same way about Pete or OMG or what Stearns is doing now. I think it's completely different. One at bat. That's how baseball is. One at bat changes it. Brandon Lee also writes, overall, I approve the job that Stearns has done, but much of that depends on the next 2 months and how he builds this team. I feel like everybody's focused on 26. I think that, I guess, this is where Brandon is with a lot of Mets fans saying, hey, I like this to be a little bit more about now, not just the future. On the website, this is from Dwight. Hey, Mike, I've been listening to you for years and really enjoy your content. Just want to comment on your rebuilding episode. I understand that David Stearns isn't emotionally attached to players like Alonso, Nimmo, and Diaz. I also understand the thinking that shakeup is needed. However, they got rid of players that have produced year after year. Alonso plays every day and can be penciled in for 35 and 100. Diaz was literally the only pitcher that was reliable all season. And then talking about run prevention and letting our best pitcher walk, getting rid of a first baseman that despite his shortcomings, he picks it well, very well at first, and bringing someone who's played half his games hasn't even played half his games at first. Hope Stearns is something up his sleeve on the trade market. But from where I stand, we are the worst than we were last year. Stearns' words and actions contradict each other. That's very fair, Dwight. I think this is a don't tell me, show me type of situation. I'm giving you throughout this show what I believe Stearns is vision and behaviors are from educated, sourced, well-researched positions. I'm not saying I feel comfortable because, again, there's a lot of variability, especially when you're relying on unknowns like prospects. You're exactly right. He let known commodities go out the door, which he felt were sunk costs going forward. He felt Nimmo was not going to be the same going forward. Diaz was a risk. That's fair. And less so because Diaz was the one he probably wanted the most, and that he didn't believe Alonso at $30 million a year would age well enough and would clog up his payroll and potentially his roster, especially because if he had to be a DH and you might need that spot for Soto. You might have had some duplication there, and he feels he could replicate in some way, shape, or form 35-100. Again, I understand how you're feeling, but I think that all I'm trying to do here is set the tone of what the reality is that we're in, not what we want. The reality is where we're at, so we understand why they're doing things a certain way. If this doesn't work, this guy will be out in a couple of years. If this team fails to make any progress, if the farm system bombs, if they regress even further from 83 wins, remember, having an 83-88 win team is not much different. The first 2 years of Stearns' tenure, those teams are very similar. You're talking about five games. If you go back to the OMG run, you could pick, throw a dart at the schedule of wins. You could pick five games they easily could have lost. One of them late in the year with Atlanta with Lindor. A couple of walk-offs. What it was, Vientos had a couple of walk-offs. September, they, you know, had some good fortune against the Red Sox, you know, getting out of some big jams with the bullpen. I mean, just go through the schedule. The Mets, those games didn't break their way. When you're in that bandwidth, that mid to high 80s bandwidth, it's a very minor difference between those kind of teams. Now, if you're a 95-win team versus an 83-win team, that's different. That's different. Then you're playing in a different yard. I think that he felt with that core that he had an 83-88 win bounce of the ball team, and he didn't want to keep it. He didn't want to keep it together. We could, I can't argue with anything you're saying. I'm just telling you, it doesn't mean that we're right. Just because we feel that way and Stearns doesn't, doesn't mean that we're right. I guess we'll see at this point. Let's go to the chat. Frank, I already replied on X, but if you didn't see it, I'm not sure, but I can't approve of what he's done so far. He preaches run prevention and proceeds to replace Alonso with a guy that's played an inning at the position, leaving Ryan O'Hearn on the table, who took the kind of contract from the Pirates. Of all teams that Stearns has been willing to give out, there's no starting left fielder and center fielder right now. Tyron Taylor is alone, and we've seen that not work out. The rotation, which failed him in 2025, is still the same. Now, by all counts, I don't think his work is done, so I'm wait and see. To add to my point about no starting left fielder, I know he wants to give Carson Benj a chance. I can appreciate that, but what if that doesn't happen? Not that I loved McNeil, but he would have been a contingency plan. I understand they have 40-man roster constraints, but how's that a plan now? Nick Morabito, question mark, G. Juan Bay in his 587 career OPS. I think Carson Benj is a highly rated prospect, Frank. I think that there is a lot of risk in a top prospect coming in and being given the job. But let me give you one example I thought of, and I'll just think about it because it's Milwaukee. Let me bring up the Brewers here, and I think about this. So Milwaukee in 2024, when, if you remember, they came into Citi Field and swept the Mets early. Let me make sure I got the right stats here. At 20 years old, Jackson Churio was given the starting left field job. Finished third in the Rookie of the Year and 22nd in MVP. Got some MVP votes. At 20 years old, the Brewers gave. Now, basically what we're saying here in New York is that the Mets can't do what the Brewers do. You know, that's really where it's at. And then, you know, if you look at times, Freddie Peralta, who everybody's pining for the Mets to clean out the farm for, was, you know, was reliever the first two or three, but, eventually they kept him in the bullpen, they developed him, and by the age of 25, he was given a spot in the rotation and made the All-Star team. I think that that's kind of where, as a fan base, and me as well, haven't been comfortable with that stuff. And what we do is we either trade those, or advocate for trading for those guys for established pieces, or write them off and don't even want to see them. I've been guilty of that. I've been hard on Beatty and Vientos and Alvarez more than anybody. So, I mean, I think that's, I just want to give you some perspective. And the only reason I use the Brewers is because it came to mind, not because of Stearns. So, James writes, depends on what fans you're talking about. Level-headed fans realize this is a business and are seeing restraint and reset. The Mets have real talent in the minor leagues. Whether that translates to the bigs is the question always, right? Yeah, James got it right. This is, you're going to have to take a chance, and especially in an environment, I keep going back to it, we just don't know what the new CBA is going to look like. And if there's restrictions on roster moves because of payroll, not just taxation, you're going to need that farm system. I mean, think about, look, NBA players now are getting $60, $70 million contracts. You have a hard time building. The Knicks have a hard time, and they have to develop second-round picks to play big minutes right now this year because they can't bring in veterans because they have so many high-paid stars on their roster. Stars, by the way, two of which in the starting lineup took pay cuts to stay there, or else it'd be worse. And that's in a 15-man roster in the NBA. The NFL gets that kind of money for quarterbacks, but as you get to some of the other positions, you could get, not everybody's getting big money. Quarterbacks get big money, wide receivers, maybe top defensive players, but not everybody else. NHL's never been in that payroll stratosphere. You're in a sport which has a 40-man roster, and then north of that because of shuttling players, injuries, whatever, and a basic pitcher is getting, like, league average is getting about $15, $16 million. Like, that's the baseline. Every good, pretty good player, Jorge Polanco, getting $20 million. $22 million. You can't pay everybody. You can't build a roster without young, controllable talent. Now, does the new CBA now, which may be something they're looking at, require that players start getting paid during arbitration years more so they don't sit around and wait. If that happens, you got an even bigger problem. You know, we'll see how that works out. Do they, because usually with unions, it's about the stars and the big time players. They don't care about the young players in a union. They care about making sure that the guys who have put the time in the union get paid. It's usually the kids and the minor leaguers that take it on the chin. Will they reevaluate that? I guess we'll see. We'll see how that all that works out. So I think that's it for today. I've gone a little bit longer than I want, but I appreciate everybody. And if you reached out to me and I didn't get it, like I said, come to me at MikeSilvat@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. So keep checking me out. Appreciate everybody for tuning into this first show of 2026. Like I said, I wanted to take a different approach today and really set the tone for like how we're going to look at how this roster is built, how this team is run, because I see a lot of people getting frustrated because they're not really reading the tea leaves correctly. Read the Will Salmon article from The Athletic. Maybe I'll dive deeper into that. Going to dive deeper into some maybe good bullpen options out of the farm this week over on Beyond the Mic. We'll see what else will come. There's some rumblings that the Mets are working on a trade for the Mets and Rays. We'll see if there's any juice to that. You know, it's really frustrating right now because X is a great resource, but it's so full of misinformation on many fronts, it becomes frustrating. And I really am so tired of the Mets have checked in on this and this team has looked at that, or agents throwing out stuff. Like, I'm just not interested. I got better things to do with my life. So hope you enjoyed this kickoff show of 2026 with me. More to come. Of course, you can check me out at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join us free for chat. It's going to be really fun during the season when the games start. You can get updates on the show, interact with me, subscribe to premium content. It's all at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Happy New Year. Until then, take care, everybody.